Welcome to Flowcast. I'm Stephanie Steele. Today I'm blessed to invite you to a conversation with Dr. Lucinda Bisher and Dr. Keith Bisher. The three of us are Springfield Dominican Associates, and we are also all members of the St. Joseph Parish in Springfield. Hi, Lucinda and Keith. How are you guys doing today?
Great. How are you, Stephanie?
I am fine. I'm getting my classroom ready for this upcoming school year. I'm interviewing you guys. Like, I couldn't be better.
You have good energy, Stephanie.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I like this. This is super fun. So a little bit of background on you guys. Lucinda is a dermatologist with SIU Medicine, and Keith is a clinical psychologist with Psychological Services of Central Illinois. But their medical expertise is not the reason why we are together today. As amazing as their professional lives are, the real reason we are embarking on this conversation is that Keith and Lucinda have been married for 41 years. Holy cannoli, can you imagine? Because, I mean, that's a really great milestone. They grew up in Columbia, Missouri, and have known one another practically their entire lives. So they are joining me to see if we can make any progress towards solving the existential challenge many of my contemporaries and myself are having. How, in this technological, unpredictable, challenging, and ever-changing social environment, is it even possible to find a suitable life partner? So, all you single people out there, do you understand the problem? I think you do. We've asked our friends, we've asked our peers, we've asked our sister friends at Cor Unum, and now we're going to ask Lucinda and Keith to help us out. Since every person I know is a sucker for a good love story, Lucinda and Keith, can we start by hearing yours today?
Oh, you want me to go on that one? Well, we'd like to say it was an arranged marriage and we were married at 12 because, you know, we're still pretty young, but that's actually not the truth. Yeah, we best friends in high school. And then finally, at the end of our senior year, I had the gumption to ask her out on a date. And the rest is history.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
And so then I guess since we were fortunate enough to like meet prior to our podcast endeavor. So I guess for clarifying for our audience, you guys dated throughout college then as well, correct?
Correct. Yeah. We dated in college. He actually asked me out. He doesn't remember, but in ninth grade, but I wasn't allowed to date until I was 16. Not that it mattered because people weren't asking, but so I kind of, you know, reconciled us to being friends and good friends through all the groups at school. But yeah, we did date during college, all during college, and then got engaged our senior year of college. Once we both got into our graduate programs that we knew we'd be in the same place for a while, which was very fortunate. We assumed we'd be apart for training and jobs and things like that for at least a while, as most people are. And the rest, yeah, then we got married literally the week after we graduated from undergrad. So that was a fun time. Yeah.
I can't imagine like taking finals, but then also getting ready to get married, because finals time is, especially when you're a senior, it's just kind of like,
yeah,
super, super duper busy, like go, 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 and no sleep and pots on, yeah, pots on pots of coffee. So
I should say that was probably common for that era, early 1980s. That's how old we are. Okay. So it was pretty common, I think, to get married right after college or even in college. There was something called, at the University of Missouri where we went,
Married Student Housing.
Yeah.
Oh, and wow.
I mean, I would say that we were at a point in our lives, it was either, I don't think we were in the family or mental state of moving in together, you know, economically, which I understand now. I get why people do that. But it was sort of like either or, and for whatever reason, we decided, okay, we're going to go all in. We'll get married.
Oh, that's awesome. I like that. Very cool. Thank you for sharing, guys.
Sure.
You're welcome.
So I polled my friends who are single in relationships and married. Some of these friends have children, others don't. So wide range of friends. And I asked them if they could ask you two anything without judgment, what they would ask, and they delivered. So I guess
this will be interesting.
It'll be really interesting. We have a number of questions. Hopefully we have enough time today to get through the majority of them. But if we don't, we don't. And that's okay, too. I divided them into four sections. The first section is the meet cute. So I guess in 2023, dating has changed a lot, obviously. So do you think that there are ways in which people can still meet a partner organically or even just without a dating website or app? And if you do, can you maybe elaborate how you've seen it happen or how you think it could move forward?
Okay, I'll give that one a go. I'll swing it back to our own kids. We have three grown kids. Two met organically, one met through an app, through a dating app. So I guess we've had experience both ways, at least with our kids. Now, of course, back in the dinosaur days when we were dating, that didn't exist. And so I think it can be done both ways. I guess the question, if I try to answer it here, would be do things that are you might have in common with someone else. I do have to say, though, meeting through an app, our youngest daughter met a wonderful man through her app, and it's a really good match, you know.
That's awesome. That's very cool, because it can go both ways, because I know, like, people my age are like, okay, like, I'm so over the app scene, like, how do we do this? But then there's those that are younger than us that are like, okay, cool, I don't have time to go out and meet anybody, so the app is my only choice. So it's good to know that it's like a both and situation. It just depends on the type of person you are, which direction you go.
Yeah, I think to me, the inherently difficult part of the app, from what I think, envision it, is its intention is to put people together. And so there's no chance to really, like, and you're reliant on what is presented to you, right? Whereas if you meet someone in a book club or a bicycle club or whatever, you kind of can feel them out. You get to know them, the real person, because they're doing, you know, live things that you like, or reading or discussing and that sort of thing. So it does make it challenging, I think. And I think it's also the expectation that you're going to kiss a lot of frogs, right? It's sort of like with an app or even meeting someone in person. There just has to be an understanding that this is not normal. We're not normal. I mean, people don't meet, and it's not normal to meet someone this young and get married. Even our kids are like, what? How'd you do that? So I think it's, and that my daughter, our youngest daughter, who did meet her current significant other on an app, she was like, she dated a guy for 2 years in high school and then in college and a year a guy, and, you know, went through these. She was very monogamous for a long time. And then it all of a sudden hit her in grad school. She's like, oh, it's okay to go out with people, like go out and like go on a first date and go to dinner and then go, no, it's not going to work that way. But, you know, she went through three heartbreaks and breakups before she realized, this is how I'm supposed to do it, to meet people, is like, just meet people and don't commit, and, you know, right away.
Right.
So I think that's a hard thing to kind of draw the line on, you know, how long does it take to get to know someone? Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't expect it to be just from the app.
Right. I'm here for that answer. Like, absolutely. It makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Okay. So speaking of technology, because technology is literally everywhere these days, do you think it's affected your relationship with each other or your guys' relationship with your children or even other people, like in positive or negative ways? Like, how has that technology component affected those relationships that you see?
I thought of this just yesterday because our three children have me on Find My Friends, and it's always been sort of a comfort thing for me. Like when they're driving back home or whatever, I can always check and see where they are. Right now, one lives in Colorado, but she's working in Texas. And my son, who lives in Chicago, is working in Minneapolis, and they don't even know this, but I was thinking about this and I'm like, I'm so grateful that they let me do that. They don't know I'm creeping on them all the time, but it is like, before I go to bed, if I'm like, oh, I wonder, you know, if Franny's back in her hotel or whatever. It's so that, and that thing, you know, we didn't really have that when they were little or in high school, but they, you know, they got phones when they started sports in high school, because we knew they would need rides home and we didn't want them. I don't know how many times they would call from a sleepover or whatever. And like, I want to come home. And so I think it, in that way, it's helped us. I don't know your thoughts on it, what you've noticed.
Yeah, I think for the most part, it's been really enhancing our connectivity. You know, we talk about our kids a lot, but to Lucinda and myself, you know, we communicate throughout the day, you know, between little breaks in our work life and all of that. And I think it's brought us closer together because, like, well, and it can be mundane things like, you know, what are we doing tonight for dinner? Or, you know, we throw something out like, gosh, I'd really like to have a vacation in a few months. What do you think about that? And I, you know, we couldn't do that back in the day when we first met. It was like, you just have to wait and do it in person. The downside is just that, I think. It's like, then you miss all the nuances of nonverbals and touch and you know, looking each other in the eye and all that. So again, it's probably like your first question. It's kind of a mix, I think. Yeah, and we even share, to the chagrin of some of our friends, and maybe even our kids, I don't know, maybe to them, you know, we even share the same email address. And we like that because we think that enhances the openness of our communication with each other and trust and all of that. And so I think, you know, there are pitfalls if you're not doing that. And that's not to say you have to, but it's easy to communicate with other people. And sometimes you have to watch boundaries and all that and limits. And I think it's much easier now to do that in our digital age. And you can misinterpret things, as you know, through texting and, you know, posts and all of that. And so there's probably downsides to it. And we didn't have that static when we were dating or when we were first married. So it, again, I think it's a mix.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much. Next question. With the technology, with the apps, right? Sometimes I feel that they are focused more so on what you put on paper, what your answers to the questions are. And it's focused a lot on the appearance of a person rather than what is, like, what are their inward qualities? You know, what's in their heart, what's in their mind. And so while I understand it's important to feel attracted to your partner, what words of encouragement could you or would you give to those who struggle with their own self-image, you know, dating or even just meeting people in, like, that digital space? I know that's a tough one.
I guess be kind to yourself, you know, give yourself a little grace and maybe, oh boy, with the digital age, there's so much perfectionism, I think. I would say just be kind to yourself.
Yeah, and I don't think there's any way to project this onto someone else, but we all know that who we are at this moment is not who we're going to be at 10 years from now, right? Everything evolves. We evolve. We're not going to look the same. We're not going to think the same. And it saddens me that people who might see a snapshot of someone and that's who they're attracted to goes back to C.S. Lewis's four types of love, right? You know, that's basically, I can't forget the name of it. It starts with an S, but it's a type of love for something. Like, you love your stuffed animal. You love that face because you see it. And it's not a lasting love because it isn't the giving of yourself to something, which is, you know, a lasting love has to be something like that. So, but I don't know that there's any way to make that part of the understanding of the app. It's sort of like, it just reminds me of that sort of love of what's right in front of you is how the apps are set up. And so most people, I would hope, who are looking on there or making it clear, they're looking for a partner, a life partner, someone to give their life to or not. But to realize it has really nothing to do with the picture in front of you. That's Eros, right? The type of love that, you know, it's just, you know, fascination and that sort of thing, which fades. We all know it fades. So that's not helpful, I realize. But also, I just, if the person that you're communicating with via that app doesn't see that, then it's not the right person, really. People fall in love with each other who you wouldn't expect to fall in love with each other. Or they don't look like they're the same, or they look different than each other. And those are some of the, you know, there's a reason for that. Unfortunately, it's not instant attraction for most people. And unfortunately, I think that's, like I was saying, the app is set up sort of to be that way. And if it isn't what is expected on a picture or a snapshot, it's not taken seriously, I guess.
Yeah, I might add, maybe think of the app as just a start, you know, it's just, you're just opening the door and go from there.
That's awesome. That made me feel better. And it wasn't even my question, guys.
Oh, no. Yeah.
But that actually leads in, because you, Lucinda, you were talking about boundaries and creating those boundaries, which leads me into our next section that I have, which is dating and boundaries. How can, and this one's a little long, so how can someone create the boundary from the start that they are not interested in something casual and are looking for something more serious and long-term? To pull from my current obsession, the Barbie movie, how can they state that they don't want to be in a long-term, long-distance, low-commitment, casual girlfriend type of relationship?
Well, may I jump in on that one?
Absolutely.
I just say that. I guess we enjoy, for 41 years, we've been very direct with each other, but giving each other space at the same time. And I think that's just honest and transparent. And I guess if
and funny. Well, that's the best thing.
Yeah. And if you say that, I think, and if the other person runs away out the door, well, then that wasn't a good match. You know, you would hope to think they would reciprocate by being honest and saying, well, no, this is what I want, or that's exactly what I would like. Let's keep talking.
Like, because sometimes, like, you're honest, and then they're like, wait, they're not for real. And then, like, you go out on that date, and they were like, oh, you were serious. And it's just kind of like, yeah.
Yeah.
Dating's weird, y'all. 2023 is wild. And
no, they're not used to honesty. I think there are people who are just like, oh yeah, that's so funny, I'm sure that's not true. No, it's true. Like, let's all be truthful here, like transparent.
Exactly. This one is from one of my best friends for, oh my gosh, like 15 years now. She wants to know how you can tell if you're in a situationship or if you're in a relationship. And so a situationship is that weird stage where you're doing everything that people would be doing in a relationship, but there's no title, like you're dating like exclusively-ish, but big on that ish. Mm. Like, so there's no like actual commitment. So how can, even if you put it out there, like, hey, I'm looking for something serious, I would like to move forward with this, how can you move from that situationship and put that boundary up of, I would like to move forward, rather than them saying, oh yeah, we can totally try being in a relationship, and then 2 weeks later being like, oh, I'm sorry, this is just too much. But they've, you know, you've been going out on 3 dates a week with them for 3 months. So that sounds pretty relationshipy to me, but.
Ugh. I was going to, well, I'm sure you have an opinion on this too. I'd like to know it. But I think that's where I would struggle if I was in, you know, this day and age looking for someone is, you know, you're not doing this for fun, to go out to meet people and just have a few drinks and on a couple dates and then on to next candidate number 2 or 3 or 4. But I don't see any other way around doing it that way, because it's not fair to set up that first date as, I need a commitment, let's go on a date, right?
Right.
It's tricky, because we just said, like, our youngest is like, oh, I'm supposed to date several, just go out once or twice and decide. And it's okay to say no on the third, you know, whatever. So I don't think I have a good suggestion for that. I mean, I agree that being transparent is the way it should be. And I don't know. I mean, that's who you want to go out on a date with to begin with. And why would you perpetuate it if it wasn't going anywhere? Unless someone just is a commitment phobe. I don't know. Like, they never were intending to be committed. Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I'm thinking, relationships are kind of messy.
Yeah,
and cool. If you acknowledge that you're in transition, you know, between, what'd you call it, a situation?
A situationship.
Yeah, okay, which point. Is a new term for me.
And maybe you have to go through that, really.
Yeah, and you don't know how long a situationship is going to last, maybe, or be. Maybe for some people it's a couple weeks, and for other people it's a couple years. And it's individual differences, I think. But again, back to what Lucinda said, I think I would encourage our listeners to be transparent. And if they can say, well, I'm not for sure where we are in the stage of our relationship, And the other person hopefully will say, well, this is what I would like it to be. And maybe the other person's ambivalent. And then you have tolerance and patience with that process, unless it gets too burdensome for the other people, for the other person, pardon me, and they don't want to wait any longer. Mm-hmm. But I think there's that messy, ambiguous stage that every relationship goes through. I would even say probably we did. Mm-hmm. I can't remember because mm-hmm. it was so far or long ago. But anyway,
but
that's
think,
my thought.
Of, yeah, mm-hmm. And in the term of true love, right, if that's what everyone is seeking, is a true agape or true love without conditions. It's, you know, that's what you want. So you don't want to settle for less than that. And the other person, if you really are feeling like that's happening for you, it might be worth waiting or worth having a discussion, obviously, but then maybe being in the situationship for a little longer, if there is some hint that's going to happen. You can't fall in love at the same time necessarily. And
good point.
You want someone who's going to give themselves to you. And I don't think that can happen right away. I think that's not real love. So it may take time.
All right.
It's messy. That's a really good word for it, because it's not easy, especially somebody new. It takes a long time.
It does.
Yes.
Relationships are so messy.
The problem is it's not always fun. They aren't always fun dates. And I think if you're lucky enough to know that it's not fun on the first or second date, good for you. You know, move on, be done, and it's okay.
Yeah, I was going to add one more thing. Trust your emotions.
Yes.
Trust your gut.
Yes.
And because we're in such a, I guess, thought-provoking, you know, media, you know, digital world now, a lot of words, and that's why I think we can overdo it with our remote connections, because we miss out on the emotional connectivity, you know. So
trust yourself.
Trust yourself and trust your gut.
And embrace the mess.
Yes, yes.
When applicable.
Yeah.
So boundaries. So how did you guys set boundaries while you're dating and like now that you're married? So like with communication, wanting or not wanting children, disciplining potentially those children, where to live, finances, etc. Like how did you set those while you were dating? But then like also how did you like develop those boundaries as you yourselves grew in your relationship, and then now you're married. So for 41 years.
I'd say go from a me to an us in every way you can. Mm-hmm. As an example, you know, finances. I know people do it differently, but we just, it's all in one big pot for us. Decisions, joint. Yes, I mentioned earlier the email account shared, mm-hmm. which may sound,
I didn't realize that was odd.
Really odd, but well, I think most people have individual accounts. Now we each all have our individual
work, yeah.
personal, professional email accounts, probably several, but anyway, but I think it's, you just got to, and this is biblical, I believe, it's like you're going from a me to an us. And I think you really got to think of the couplehood as one. But still maintain, of course, a balance with your own individuation and your own identity, of course, and have your own interests. I guess we could go into that. Lucinda and I have similar interests, but also very different interests. And sometimes I think we'll run across each other for like half an hour before we go to sleep at night. You know, mm-hmm. I'm off doing my thing, she's doing hers. But then other times we'll spend the entire weekend together. So that's a concrete example of, you know, finding that balance between the me, but still focusing on the us, I think.
Right. And you don't, mm-hmm. again, there's, you can cross over into this sort of codependency stuff, right? If it's too much us, which fortunately I don't think we suffer from that, but it would be easy to do if you don't have your own interests, and then you're very dependent on, you can't depend on the other person for your happiness, right? So first and foremost, make yourself happy. Love what you do as far as your work or your avocations. And then you're a lot more interesting and you have a lot more to talk about that way. And you bring something interesting into the relationship.
I was thinking a lot of our typical discussions, we can go out and talk for 2 hours because I don't know exactly what everything Lucinda's doing. Same with her to me. And I find it fascinating. I guess I would say I would include active listening with all that too. Mm-hmm. Listen intently to your other the other person in your life, and that will reap wonderful rewards.
And everything has to be just professionally for us. We've never been able to talk about specific people. Obviously, it's all sort of on a generic and professional level, just interesting, you know, aspects of our careers and people we come across, but make for good conversation. And yeah. I learn a lot from, obviously, from what he does.
And vice versa.
Yes.
That's awesome. I really love that you guys touched on interests, because that was my next question. Oh, so right. You guys are rock stars. I don't know if you know this, but you are. So the fourth and final section I have is like, so you're serious now. So married long-term in partnership, obviously. So you guys spoke about having your own independent interests. So how important is it to have those, but then like have a solid, like similar interest, like sense of humor or like your faith background or the like? And then the follow-up question to that is, can and should or have independent interests become things that you guys ultimately like enjoy doing together?
Yeah, I think it goes back to what Key said about tolerance. You don't have to, but it makes for a more interesting relationship when you tolerate to the point that you actually enjoy hearing about those other interests, living vicariously through those other interests. You know, he climbs mountains. I've done some hikes, but nothing like what he's done, but it's fascinating and I can live it vicariously. So there's a certain amount of tolerance for each other's interests and activities and allowing them to go off and do that and being happy that I'm thrilled when he can go take a trip, you know, with his buddies on a bike trip or do a bike race. And he's learned that that's not for me. It's, I might like to do it just, you know, casually or for fun, but I'm not competitive. I'll probably have a shorter life if I do those things just because it would be hard for me. So tolerance, I think it lends itself to all of that and putting up with those interests that maybe are not your own.
I do have to say, I think it's easier if you have somewhat of a common worldview, and that may be critical. And if back in the dating phase, it's like, can I live with this person's kind of core beliefs, which are probably pretty indelible throughout the lifespan, really. I mean, we all grow and I think we can all change, but I think that, you know, the basic blueprint is probably there personality wise and belief wise. And I think if it's too different, you're going to be struggling a lot. So that may be something to look at early on. Are we overlapping, you know, a certain percentage, and is that good enough? Yeah. And that's going to be, again, individual differences. You know, who knows what's good enough for each couple, but I think you got to have that discussion sometime. And it's like, okay, yeah, you don't have to be in the same political party and blah, blah, blah. But I do think you have to be somewhat overlapping in your worldviews. And that does help. And that would include, I think, your faith and, you know, as well as all the more superficial things, money and all the hot button topics of the day. Think of all those. And if you can overlap a bunch on those, I think you're in good then.
All right. Awesome. I have two more questions. So my follow-up with this one is, with growing together, like when you have children, right? If that's the path that some of our listeners go on, how did you guys continue to prioritize your partnership while also still being a present parent for your children, like when they were younger, and then also after kids? Like, how do you keep from being like having all of this in common when you're dating and when you're getting to know each other, then like having your kids in common? And then like, how do you, I guess, still find you at the end? Mm-hmm. Like you as in you two together.
One thing that probably helped us is we didn't have children. We got married at 21. Our first child was when we were 31 intentionally, because we were in training all that time. And so it was very planful. So we had our 20s to like, I remember, you know, our thing would be like, if we get away for the weekend, we go to a bed and breakfast somewhere, you know, up north. And that was fun. So I felt like we had 10 years of just us. And even though we were working a lot of hours, we could come home and we could, you know, connect. And then when we had kids, so I felt like my 20s, we were able to be a couple. And then our 30s, we had three kids, and that takes a totally different toll on you. And honestly, some of it was just survival mode, right? It's like, you're doing this, I'm doing this, see you later. And that's all it was. But luckily, I mean, I don't know if there's any magic way to say that we connected, but we had really good support system. Like Keith's parents were so good about, you know, watching the kids while we would go off on a bike trip or something, so we could stay connected. But yeah, it is a fine balance. But I would say have a good support system that'll let you stay connected. And we changed I think we changed a lot in both, in every decade. It's been a little bit different.
Yeah, I'd add to that, have discussions when you're going through transitions, because it's super stressful, of course, to get married. It's super stressful to have a kid if you choose, or more kids. It's super stressful to throw those kids out of the nest and then be back to couplehood singularly again. And I think you just have to bring it up to each other. Wow, we're going through a transition. That's when everyone gets all stressed out during transitions. Let's acknowledge it. Talk about it. It's not the end of the world, but just talk about it, because it is hard. And then on a more superficial maybe answer to your question, date nights. I think that's imperative. Is somehow, some way, and that could even be going to the grocery store together, and you hired a sitter for an hour to look after your kids that are ripping up the house. And it's like, get away for a little bit, and it doesn't have to be romantic dinner over candlelight. It can be, yes, grocery store, go to the car wash together, something. Go for a walk around the block, you know, and just find some time for couplehood.
I laugh because one of the date nights, I remember when our son was about 4 years old, and we decided, okay, good. The kid, he's in bed. Our other daughter was in bed. So it was before charcuterie boards were a thing. It was like cheese and crackers and whatever. We just got it out. We said, we're just going to have this. And we didn't hear him, but he comes up over the steps and he goes, is that cheese? You know, so much for our date night. Yeah. He goes, come on down, come on, have some cheese and crackers. But again, you have to be flexible and tolerant, but it's still a good story. We think about it all the time.
Yeah.
I like that because that goes back to what we said before, like how you have to embrace that mess as you move through the different transitions.
And also, like he said, I would say too about the whole transition thing, he taught me this a long time ago, that not all stress is bad stress, right? There's good stress and bad stress. A wedding is good stress. It's a good transition and all that stuff, but it's still stress, right? So having a kid, oh, this is wonderful and this is great, but it's still stress and it's still taxing physiologically, mentally, all that stuff. And you're right. It's just got to be put out there that this is hard and this is stressful. Yeah. And we're going to stick together on it.
I'm laughing sometimes with our friends, or maybe with one of our son and daughter-in-law have a child recently. And I think it's funny. Sometimes we lean in and say, doesn't it stink having a kid? Because it's really hard. And I think it validates it, obviously not to diminish, you know, the gift of having a child. But I think you got to acknowledge that, yeah, even these wonderful things like getting married, having a kid, retirement, it's good stress, but it's still stress. Mm-hmm. And you got to talk mm-hmm. about it.
It's messy.
Right. I love that. And then last question, where do you think that faith can play into all of this? And has it helped you throughout your friendship and then your marriage?
Definitely. I mean, I've been contemplative or prayed, you know, all my life. And Keith actually joined in that because, honestly, when we were in high school, we were in our humanities class, and the priest that I knew from the Newman Center and the university, he came and gave the, you know, the little spiel on the Catholicism. I don't know if that's when you met Father Mike or not, but so Keith started going to church with me after we started dating, and we became, anyway, Keith was not Catholic when we started dating, and he didn't convert before he got married, but he eventually said, I'm going to church with you. I believe this stuff. So he converted before we had kids. But Father Mike was someone who we took on his first ski trip with us one time when we were in college. So it was part of our lives. I'm not a preachy kind of person, so I don't talk about it a lot. It's just pretty much, you know, such a deep part of me. I don't think about separating it out, and I don't talk about it because I can't really explain it. You know, it's like faith. You can't really explain it, but I have been very blessed all my life. And I know who it's thanks to. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. And I got to agree. I think for me, I grew up in the Protestant church, and anyway, Lucinda just told that story. So here I come into Catholicism. Mm. I don't know. I think it's central, obviously, for many deep reasons, but I think it's also stimulating for our relationship. It's like we have these deep conversations from time to time, not every night, because that's mm-hmm. not normal. And so we have these conversations about, you know, what's the meaning of this? Why is this thing this way? How do you interpret this thing? And and then we go to church together. And I think that's kind of a nonverbal thing. It's like we're just in the presence of one another. And I think it is important. And I think if you leave that out when you begin dating, or you're kind of glossing over it, you may find yourself coming up short, maybe in the long run. And I should say, it's something we've probably done a lot of growth with and through over the decades, you know, and still are. You know, we just recently became Dominican associates last year, you know, at 61. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, or 60, yeah, 61. Yeah, anyway, so, yeah.
Cool beans. Thank you guys so much. Aww. So, Lucinda, Keith, thank you so much for hanging out tonight. And it's been a joy talking with you about the development of relationships and wrapping up with how it plays into our faith today. A reminder to our listeners that all the resources we mentioned today can be found in the show notes for this episode at flowcastlisten.org or wherever you find your podcasts. The Flow and Flowcast is an acronym for the life of the world, reminding us of our call to imitate Christ, who offered himself for the life of the world. Thanks to Flowcast team engineer and editor Brandon Durham, marketing director Jean Ann Miller, and the producer, Sister Beth Murphy. Join us next time.